Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to everybody. So glad that you are here. Again, we appreciate the good food tonight by Nancy and Polly. Each week we have a meal at 5:30. And our study beginning at 6. Mary Catherine, you're here somewhere. There you are. What's the menu for next week? Do you know yet? Chicken tacos and something else. That's going to be queso. Ooh, you know it's going to be good. All right. So, yeah, if you can, come a little early, 5:30, and join us for a meal. Good to have a meal with the whole group and not to sit out and not eat. So, yeah. Invite everyone to eat. But even if you don't feel like eating, still come. We want everyone to come. We have a four-week study tonight and three more weeks and during the season of Lent. The study is entitled Jesus Revealed, and it's based on a book by Matt Rawle, A-R-A-W-L-E. He's the pastor of Asbury United Methodist Church in Bossier City. I've known Matt for a long time. He's a minister in our Louisiana Annual Conference, and I really think a lot of him. And we've done several studies by him before. In fact, when you see his video, you'll recognize him. Yeah. The purpose of the 4 weeks is, of course, to read God's Word and think about it and learn a little bit from it. Also, to have a time of fellowship, to get to know people maybe that you haven't had a chance to meet. Our church is such a good size. Today we had a really good crowd in church. I was so thankful for 2 full services. But it's hard to meet people and get to know people in church. And it's things like this where we get to know people well. So I do encourage you, for sure, the people at your table to introduce yourself. Have y'all met? Table here? Yeah, just introduce yourself. Y'all have met? Okay. But if you look across the room and you see somebody that you don't know, introduce yourself to them. This is a good opportunity to get to know people that you didn't know before. And I always like asking this question as to which service you attend. Who attends the 9 o'clock service? Raise your hand. Mm-hmm. Who attends the 11 o'clock? Raise your hand. Yeah, really close. I would say 11 o'clock. Who attends both? Matthew. Mary Catherine, Mel, me. Yeah, I think 11 o'clock narrowly beat out 9 in this, but that was a close vote, something like 52% to 48%. Yes, we had a lot of children today, yeah, for sure. And this is a chance to ask questions. Any question that you want to ask about the study or anything in general, I'm very open to you asking questions. On Sunday morning during worship, it really is not appropriate to raise your hand and ask a question. that would really throw me. Of course, after the service you can ask, but I mean for everyone to hear the question and to give me a chance to answer in front of everyone. I'm glad to answer and welcome any questions. Thaddeus, you had a question you want to ask? That's okay. The slate roof, they're working on it. They haven't given us a finish date, but it's coming real, real soon. I'm looking forward in the next couple of weeks to be finished. They're almost through with all the hurricane repair work at the church. Very pleased, very thankful. Okay, y'all ready to start? This is focusing on the I am sayings of Jesus. We're doing 4 weeks of this. Now, there are 7 I am sayings of Jesus found in the Gospel of John. Here are the 7. From John chapter 8, verse 12. He didn't have the scripture up there. That's good. I am the light of the world. That's going to be our focus tonight. From John chapter 6, verse 35. I am the bread of life. From John chapter 10, verse 7, I am the gate of the sheep. From John chapter 10, verse 11, I am the good shepherd. From John 15, 5, I am the vine, you are the branches. And then from John 14, 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I watched Matt's presentation during the week, and I don't remember if he talked about this, but this is very important. In the Old Testament, when God appeared to Moses in the burning bush, Moses asked, "What is your name?" And the answer of God, as you remember, was, "I am who I am." That was the name of God. That's what God said, "My name is," to Moses. I am who I am. So for Jesus to say these seven times, "I am the light of the world. I am the bread of life. I am the way, the truth, and the life." He was making a claim to divinity. He was using the same language that God used to Moses in the Old Testament. What is your name? I am who I am. Jesus said, "I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the way, the truth, and the life." It was a direct claim to divinity. We'll talk about that a little bit more. I brought this to show you, being that we're going to talk about the light of the world. This is a very famous painting from church history and from the history of painting. This is hanging in a certain church in Europe. Anyone recognize this painting? Nope. No one recognizes this painting? It says London. Mm-hmm. It's entitled "The Light of the World," and it's Jesus knocking at the door, and you see he's holding a lantern as he's knocking at the door, and the door handle is not on the outside where Jesus can open it. The door handle's on the inside, which means when Jesus knocks at the door of our lives, only we can open the door. What I was going to ask you, and since you don't recognize this painting, chances aren't too good that you know who the artist is, but just in case, I have a prize. And these are good prizes tonight. Unlike the beach blanket this morning, this is a good prize. Who's the artist? Good guess, but that's not it, but thanks for trying. Nope, good guess, that's not it. Nope, good guess. The initials are H.H. You know, Hugh Hefner was a Methodist. He was. Yeah, we're so proud. Yeah. Not really. H.H.? Okay, let me give you a first name. Holman. Hunt. Holman Hunt. Not ringing a bell? Holman Hunt. Yeah, okay, and then the last question, which I bet you can get, and I'll be the first one to say it. Where is the painting held? Where is it hung? Got it. Okay, I got a prize for you, Everett. St. Paul's Cathedral in London, England. I have some good prizes if we all give them away. This is a book about Theodore Roosevelt called Theodore Rex by Edmund Morris, all on CD. Huh? Right. Huh? That's no junky stuff there. Okay, tonight our focus is on the light of the world. The video lasts about 13 minutes. We'll watch that and then we'll talk about it afterwards. So, Nate, let's roll it.
Symbols are all around us. From stop signs to corporate logos, religious icons and artwork, graphics and images are inescapable. Even the words we read in this study are symbols. The Gospel of John's use of symbolism is unique in the New Testament. In the Gospel of John, we find seven I am statements where John uses rich symbols to describe who Jesus is. I am the light of the world, I am the good shepherd, I am the resurrection and the life, and so on. Like the other Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John's Gospel narrates Jesus' life, suffering, death, and resurrection, but John's story reads like a drama, saturated with imagery and nuance, metaphors and symbolism. It's not that the other Gospels are void of deeper meaning, but John's voice masterfully uses symbols to communicate who Jesus is and what it has to do with us. Like all good art, John's Gospel points beyond itself, calling us to look deeper than the words on the page. It starts from the very beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The scene is set. Think of it like this. When God created the heavens and the earth, God offered the universe as an alphabet full of nearly infinite possibilities. But the letters need order and context. So God put on flesh and walked among us as the Word, capital W. But as powerful as a single word is, it needs to be linked with other words, small w, as in a community of faith, in order to come together as a story. And a good story can change the world. And John's Gospel is good story. When God began creating the heavens and the earth, light was the first of God's creations. Although water was already present, Genesis chapter 1 records that light shined in the darkness even before the sun's creation. Before the mountains touched the sky ahead of any flora or fauna, even before the keeping of time, there was light, and the light was good. But light is a funny thing. A single flashlight can brighten a dark room, but stare directly at the flashlight, and you will be temporarily blinded. That's because ultimately, light is passive. Light is meant to illuminate everything but itself. Jesus said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." The light goes ahead, revealing where to walk. When Jesus reveals that he is the light of the world, we're to understand that Jesus illuminates the truth of God, but we must be careful not to become blind with an obsession of Jesus himself. Throughout the gospel, there's a tension between light and dark, sight and blindness. After Jesus heals a man who had been born blind by spreading mud and spit on his eyes and sending him to wash in the pool of Siloam, his neighbors are obviously curious as to who healed his vision. They ask him where this miracle man might be, to which he replies, "I don't know." He knows that Jesus is the one who opened his eyes, but he doesn't know where he is, from where he came, where he's going. In other words, his eyes are healed, but that was never quite the point. He's beginning to see and understand who Jesus is. It's like when you've been sleeping all night and someone hypothetically comes into your room like a five-year-old and turns the light on without any warning. Sure, you can see, but it's disorienting and it's confusing. The Pharisees certainly seem to be confused, but in a different way than this man. The man's friends bring him to see the Pharisees, and that's when we discover that this healing happened on the Sabbath. Dun, dun, dun. The Pharisees are not happy. It seems that they have become blind to their own religion. Have you considered to what you might be blind? What is it that you might be missing? Have certain experiences become so mundane that you have become blind to their worth? Have you forgotten to dedicate the time necessary to seek, to look, or to discover what God is calling you to become? Maybe there's someone you haven't seen in a while, and maybe her or his presence is missing in your life. Maybe you've forgotten to connect with them because precious time has been missed since you've seen each other last. In other words, there may be more of the Pharisees' blindness within us than we care to admit. Now, if we take a step back and increase our view, we will see that light, in the absence of light, is a major theme in John's gospel as a whole, but presented perhaps in an unexpected way. For example, if you hold your index, and I invite you to try this, if you hold your index fingers closely together about 3 inches from your eyes so that your fingers are slightly out of focus, you'll see an interesting phenomenon. Looking past your fingers at something in the distance, preferably a bright, plain, colored wall, you'll see that the light in between your fingers contains tiny, shadowed lines. The light in between your fingers actually is casting shadows on itself due to an interference pattern. Throughout John's gospel, light and dark play off of one another, sometimes as opposing forces, but also sometimes as partners. You see, a picture is never bigger than its frame. A frame sets the boundaries inside of which the work of art is contained, and it directs where our focus should be. A frame is a shortcut for interpretation. For example, if I go to a museum and I see a piece of art inside of a frame, I don't have to sit and ponder whether the light switch nearby is part of the work. A picture is never bigger than its frame, except good art always points beyond itself. At the end of the Gospel of John, John writes, "After these things, Jesus showed himself in this way." Jesus showed himself. Life was revealed in the resurrection. Early in the morning, while it was still dark, Mary came to the tomb and found that the tomb was empty. Jesus was raised in the midst of darkness, fulfilling John's prologue that the darkness would not overcome him. The darkness that veiled Nicodemus' understanding, the darkness that surrounded Judas when he betrayed Jesus, is now redeemed. After the resurrection, some of the disciples, Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, James and John, and 2 other disciples, how would you like to be remembered forever as one of the other 2 disciples, they all go fishing. And they catch nothing. And it was night. They go fishing at night and catch nothing, and of course they didn't catch anything. They surround themselves with darkness, the darkness of what is familiar, the darkness of their previous life, the darkness of what life was like before they knew Christ. But then there is daybreak, and they see Jesus standing on the lakeshore, and he calls out to them saying, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" Now, when Jesus asks a question, he already knows the answer. It's like when the man and woman were in the garden and they ate of the forbidden fruit and they hide behind a shrubbery and God asks, "Where are you?" Do you mean that the creator of everything seen and unseen, everything in the universe, can't see them because they're hiding behind a shrubbery? Of course not. God is calling them out of themselves, calling them into forgiveness, calling them not to be afraid of the divine presence. With God, there is always abundance. With God, there is always grace. When you surround yourself with the light of Christ, your net becomes overflowing with fish. That's what good art does. It's so abundant that the frame can't hold it. The gospel begins with light and ends with light. But the story isn't yet finished. The light of the gospel is so abundant it spills beyond the frame of the New Testament and brings us back to the beginning of it all. God's grand drama begins and ends with light. If we look at the entirety of the story, God's word is a word about light. If the Bible were a play or a movie, you might describe it as a play about light itself. After all, any show you see on the stage or on the screen begins and ends with some kind of light. The lights are dimmed in the house, signaling that the show is about to start. The stage illuminates where the director wants you to see. The way the light begins a story is crucial.
Okay, good job, Matt. Thank you. I'm going to feed out 2 questions for you, one at a time, for you to talk about at your tables for just a few minutes. Question number one, why don't y'all, Morgans, join those folks there. This table is 2 places for you. That'll be great if you don't mind. Thank you. Question number one, what stood out to you as you watched the video? So that's the first question. As you watched Matt make his presentation, what kind of stood out to you, something that you learned that you didn't know before, something that you disagreed with, something that you have a question with, something like that? Okay, what stood out to you at your group? At your group. Here we go. Hey, let me hear some answers as to what really stood out to you as you watched Matt Rawls' video, or a question you may have, or something that you disagreed with. What's one? What's one? I tried doing, we talked about it here, the fingers like that. I didn't get that. Okay. I didn't. A little bit closer, okay. Right. Yeah, something just wasn't jiving with that. Yeah, okay. Somebody else, something that jumped out at you, a question that you had, something that you really liked that you disagreed with. Go ahead, Everett. Matt said it the other way. He said the frame comes first. Yeah, it's the boundaries. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Somebody else. That's kind of leading up to our second question in a minute, but that's a good observation, Heather. We sometimes have a tendency just to listen to people that we agree with. Yeah, and we'll talk about that in just a minute with our second question.
Well, we have a younger person at our table, thank goodness, and she had an interesting concept that I hadn't thought about at all. Would you share that with
me? Just that in science, light is the fastest. You can't travel faster than light. Nothing can. Therefore, it comes before. And which, I don't know, God is the ultimate scientist, so.
That's awesome. You know. That's a good observation. Nothing travels faster than light. Light always goes before. Jesus is the light. God is the ultimate scientist. Those are really good observations. Somebody else. Why did Nicodemus want to meet him at nighttime? My theory on that is that Nicodemus was trying to protect his own back. He was a Pharisee, and it wasn't popular to meet with Jesus. I have two theories. One is that he didn't want people to see that he was going to talk to Jesus. And the other, it was nighttime darkness in his life. So it's kind of symbolic. It was literally, he really met with him at night because he was afraid, but it was darkness in his life also. Nicodemus appears later on in the Gospels. He was one of the ones who helped to bury Jesus and spoke up for him in the trial of Jesus. Nicodemus ended up being a really good guy, along with Joseph of Arimathea. All right, question number two at your table that y'all were kind of hitting on at Heather's table. Matt talks about the blindness of the Pharisees after Jesus healed the man born blind. We all have a tendency to be spiritually blind. What could you be possibly blind to and why? All right, what could you possibly be blind to, a little bit blind to maybe, and why? All right, so talk about it at your table for a minute. Some answers. What are some things that you are possibly blind to? Somebody wants to share. Somebody share something that you talked about that you are spiritually blind to. All right, Michael.
Terry said that the Cowboys' chances of winning the Super Bowl.
No, that was him. He said it.
Completely blind to it. Not going to happen. We're going to surprise us.
We said we're blind to God's will for our own lives because we're not seeking Him and His will daily.
Okay.
He tells us, and then we just don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. So we find ourselves at times being blind to God's will for our lives because we aren't looking for it. That's a good answer. Something else that we're blind to?
Our own faults.
That's powerful. We are blind to our own faults. We can see pretty clearly the faults of other people. Pretty clearly. But my own faults, it's like Jesus said, take the log out of your own eye before the speck of dust out of your brother's eye. Yep. We are blind to other people with cultures that are different from us. A lot of young people today are blind to older people. Have you ever felt yourself feel like you're a ghost at Walmart or Target or the mall? You walk along and nobody sees you. They all look right through you. You're a ghost. Or they run into you, yeah. And I'm sure the reverse is true. Sometimes older people don't see younger people. They're there because they're different. We're different, and we don't see people that are different. We're blind to it. Something else that we're blind to.
What we take for granted.
We're blind to what we take for granted. That's good. Anita? That's really, in a positive way or a negative way. We're blind as to what we say or what we do, how it can affect somebody else. Sometimes it's something so simple as an encouraging word could have a lifetime influence upon somebody. That little word of encouragement or a little word of criticism can stick with somebody for the rest of their lives. You ever read Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People? What an awesome book. If you've never read that, boy, I highly recommend it to you. In that book, he has a chapter on criticism, and he says, if you want to affect somebody for the rest of their lives, criticize them to their face. Criticize them. Say, you were wrong in this, and you did a bad job. He said, to the day they die, to the day you die, they will never forget that criticism, ever. It could be 30, 40 years. They will never forget the fact that you criticized them. So that just goes, Anita, to say what you said, that something negative or something positive, we're blind to the fact that it can really influence a person in a positive or a negative way.
Which is important for parents.
Yes, sir.
You can cripple a child by what you say.
By harsh criticism, and you can bless them with a word of encouragement. Our own complacency about going to church. And that's good. Good observation, Beth. And Ning. It's very good. Anybody else? Okay. Ooh, that's good. That sounds like Dale Carnegie. People will sometimes forget what you said, but they will never forget how you made them feel. And we're sometimes blind to it. Yes, university.
Yeah.
That is awesome. What's your first name again?
Jennifer.
Jennifer. Jennifer's a member at University United Methodist Church. Appreciate her coming with her mama tonight. What's that?
Steal her.
Oh, no, she wouldn't leave. We'd take her in a heartbeat, but no. Yeah, I'm sure she would. And we love University Church. You know, when they were shut out with their storm over there, they met in our sanctuary for a number of weeks and love their pastor. University United Methodist Church was birthed from this church many years ago. So really love that church. Okay, I want us to read John 8, 12 through 20. It's on your handout. I need a volunteer. Okay, Frank, that'd be good if you would.
Sure.
To read it for us. Frank's such a good reader. So it's right there. Everyone follow along.
When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." The Pharisees challenged him. "Here you are, appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid." Jesus answered, "Even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you have no idea where I come from or where I am going. You judge by human standards. I pass judgment on no one. But if I do judge, my decisions are true, because I am not alone. I stand with the Father who sent me. In your own law it is written that the testimony of two witnesses is true. If I'm the one who testifies for myself, my other witness is the Father who sent me." Then they asked him, "Where is your Father?" "You do not know me or my Father," Jesus replied. "If you knew me, you would know my Father also." He spoke these words while teaching in the temple courts, near the place where the offerings were put. Yet no one seized him because his hour had not yet come.
Awesome. Thank you, Frank. Not at the table, but just for a number of people to answer out loud, and I want us all to think about it. When Jesus said, "I am the light of the world," what do you think he meant by that? Let me hear three or four different answers. I am the light of the world.
It's a simple truth.
It's a simple truth. And of course, in what we're saying here, it's just our opinion as to what Jesus meant. So no right or wrong answers here. It's a simple truth, certainly.
The right direction.
The right direction. Hope.
Well, going all the way back to creation. Life was there first.
Going all the way back to creation.
Light reveals things. And he reveals the Father to us.
Light is revealing. And Jesus reveals the Father to us. Good answer.
Without him, we're in darkness.
Without him, we're in darkness. Yeah, that was one of the plagues against Egypt, darkness. All through John, there's a contrast of light and darkness. In the Gospel of John and in the letters of particularly of 1 John, there's light and darkness, the contrast that's so strong in there. Another quick question, how did the Pharisees react to this statement of Jesus? They were offended. They were looking to trap him. They were easily offended by what Jesus had to say. And in this case, they were offended again. Any other thought on how the Pharisees reacted?
They always twisted the words.
Let's think of things real quick of things that the Pharisees accused Jesus of. One of which was true and the others were false. Two things are true. One, healing on the Sabbath day. A second thing, of being a friend of sinners. That was the second thing they accused him of. So the Sabbath issues, working on the Sabbath, healing on the Sabbath, and then being a friend of sinners. False accusations. They accused him of being a glutton. Just completely irrational. Accused him of being a drunkard. Completely irrational. They accused him of being a Samaritan. He was not a Samaritan.
Well, here they accused him of lying.
Accused them of lying.
Mm-hmm. Law.
Accused them of lying. They accused them of being a blasphemer. Ultimately, that's what he was crucified for, being a blasphemer, and he was not a blasphemer. So he was falsely accused of many things, two of which were correct, two of the accusations, about healing on the Sabbath and about being a friend to sinners. I just find that interesting. That's quite a claim for him to say, I am the light of the world. He didn't say, I'm the light of Jerusalem. He didn't say, I'm the light of Israel. He said, I am the light of the world. What an incredible statement for somebody to say. If Jesus were not the Son of God, he would have been absolutely crazy. Only a crazy man would say something like that. I am the light of the world. Imagine someone in our midst would say, hey, I just want to tell the group today, I'm the light of the world. What? Okay. And the rest of the world didn't count. Mm-hmm.
He said, world.
Mm-hmm. I'm the light of the world, that the good news is for everybody.
The Jews were already rejecting him, mm-hmm. already reaching out to the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. It's a good observation. Think about Buddha, the great teacher. He claimed to have some good ideas for people, but he told his followers, don't think about me, concentrate on my teachings. Confucius in China said, how can I claim holiness or love? I think about Muhammad, the founder of Islam. He once covered his head and he said, unless God has the cloak of mercy over me, there's no hope at all. But this man, Jesus of Nazareth, is so different from everybody else who's ever lived, and he claimed about himself, I am the light of the world, and whoever follows me will walk in the light and not in the darkness. His claims were just astounding. And he didn't just make the claims, he backed them up. So I ask you, and I know that you're going to answer it right, how did he back up those claims? It's one main way. He rose from the dead. Crucified on Good Friday, 3 days later, rose from the dead and proved he is who he claimed to be. It's one thing to say, I'm the light of the world, and everyone thinks you're crazy. Another thing to back it up. Whit, you're going to say something? Nope, you're just scratching your head? Okay. But I'm just saying that was such a bold and a tremendous statement. Our time is short, but I want us to read the second reading because it is so important to the idea of light and darkness. Who would read for us John 1, 1 through 14? Okay, Paul, thank you. If you would read that for us.
Dark.
Okay, thank you, Paul. What a magnificent chapter in the Bible, the first chapter of the Gospel of John. You see, as you read this chapter, all the references to light and darkness, all through it, light and darkness, darkness, light, all through it. My favorite is the very first verse. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then going down to verse 14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, pointing out that Jesus is God who became a human being. Fundamental to Christian theology and Christian faith, Jesus is God who became a person. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, and the Word became flesh, a human being, and dwelt among us. You have any other observation about these 14 verses of John chapter 1? Gospel of John today is my favorite book in the Bible. My favorite book changes a lot, but right now it's the Gospel of John. Okay, I want to read this one little quote from Matt, and then we'll close. In the presentation in the book, Matt Rawl said, "Ultimately, light is passive. Light is meant to illuminate everything but itself. Jesus said, 'I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.' The light goes ahead of us, revealing where to walk. If we stare directly at the light, we actually stumble. The same rocks will catch our feet just as if our eyes were closed or if there wasn't any light at all. Light is meant to illuminate our surroundings so that we can clearly see the way that we are meant to go." I think that's pretty profound, that Jesus illuminates our path. So I just pray that our faith as we leave here tonight is that Jesus is the light of the world, and if we trust Him and depend upon Him, Jesus can be the light of our lives. Let's close with the prayer that's on your handout. Let us pray. Eternal God, light of the world, thank you for being with us today and for lighting our path always. Help us to see you clearly and to see the world clearly by the light you provide. We believe and trust that you are the light of the world and that in you there is life. Amen. Next Sunday evening, we'll focus on the phrase of Jesus, "I am the bread of life." And I know there's one thing that we all learned this evening. Who is this artist? AJ. Don't make me have to stay, all of us to stay later, stay after class.
AJ.
Holman Hunt. Holman Hunt. I'm going to ask you next week if I remember, and we all better know. Holman Hunt. Write it down. All right. Thank you all for being here tonight. Look forward to next week.